Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hi, welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power, and that's exactly what we're going to be focusing on today. But more than that, we're going to be focusing on the power of you, the power of your ability to make your shifts in life, to be able to bounce back from whatever life happens to hand you. And by golly, sometimes life can get pretty stinking at what it hands you in its basket of experiences. Wouldn't you agree? I'm sure all of you listening have had those moments when you say, why me? What did I do to deserve this? Well, Linda Graham, my guest today, her book is Bouncing Back, Rewiring Your Brain for Maximum Resilience and Well-Being. Linda Graham, welcome to the show. Linda, you are a marriage and family therapist, but you also are a mindfulness teacher.
Right.
And you have gotten involved into what is described as the neuroscience of human relationships.
Right.
And when I hear that term, in a way it sounds so cold. It just sounds very, very technical, like something that would be out of a sci-fi movie. We are going to do neuro whatever with the brain. And you go, okay, what is this all about? When you're talking about this, it is really much more personal than the terminology field. How did you get into this?
Well, the neuroscience that allows us to peek inside the black box of the brain and see what is happening in the brain as we do real events in real time. If we're watching the evening news or we're playing music or we're grieving the loss of a pet, the technology, which is only about 20 years old, now allows us to see what structures of the brain are being used to process information in that way and how the various structures of the brain work together. The most important part about neuroscience is the finding about 10 years ago of what they call neuroplasticity, meaning that the brain is capable of growing new nerve cells and connecting those nerve cells in pathways lifelong. And until 10 years ago, we didn't know that for sure. Now that we know that we can use experience to create new circuitry in our brains, then we can apply the findings of neuroscience to solving the very real challenges that we face as human beings. How can we be more resilient as we have to cope with losing our car keys and wallet, or losing a job, or getting a cancer diagnosis, or the teenage son doesn't come home all night? Now that we're learning how to rewire the brain for more resilience, we actually can strengthen our capacities to cope with the adversity and challenges of our lives in a more flexible and effective way.
When you go into various cultural applications, there are wisdoms from all parts of the world that have addressed this. And your poignant point is that especially in the Western world environment, being able to say physically, yes, this is what occurs, makes me chuckle, because the wise ones of even centuries ago, like Lao Tse and so many others, were expounding on this wisdom. And now in our phenomenal era of technology, we actually are saying, hey, these people were correct. They were right. And I really have to chuckle because it is so amazing. Yet it fits our modalities at this time.
Well, part of how I got interested in neuroscience was having to reconcile the focus in psychotherapy on strengthening the sense of self which we have to have, a healthy, functioning sense of self to navigate the world. And then the liberation and freedom that came from experiencing a sense of non-self or no self. And the neuroscience is what provided the bridge for me between the Eastern contemplative traditions and contemporary psychotherapy, so that we can see actually that mindfulness practices, compassion practices, strengthen exactly the same part of the brain that resonant relationships in therapy do, and that's the prefrontal cortex, which I call the CEO of resilience. Because of its integrative functioning in the brain, when we can do any practices to strengthen the functioning of our prefrontal cortex, we're strengthening our capacities altogether to be more resilient.
I enjoyed how you created the human application along with the technical application. I find so many times that it's so easy to talk technicality, but to get to the emotional part of the self and the connection, the body-mind-spirit connection, to use common terminology, it's so very important. And having had involvement with clients through the years dealing with various issues and experiences that they've gone through, the heart, the brain, the mind, all of this affects us. It's all very, very interconnected, very, 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 very much so. You really can't. If one is out of order, the rest are going to be affected. And I loved your quote in your book by Deborah McKnight Higgins. She said, "Blessed are they who are flexible, for they'll never be bent out of shape."
That's right.
Oh, my goodness.
So you're speaking to what I've learned.
That's a hard thing to learn.
You're speaking to what I've learned in working with clients, that they really love learning how their brain works because it gives them a sense of competence and mastery, and that gives themselves a sense of confidence that they actually can change their automatic, deeply embedded patterns. And so the book focuses on being able to develop somatic intelligence and how we can use the wisdom of the body to be more resilient, emotional intelligence and how we can use the wisdom of our emotions to guide our behaviors, relational intelligence and how we can use our interactions with other people to most effectively rewire the brain, as well as the practices of mindfulness and self-reflection that help us choose different options. So they are all interwoven together in the book.
Yes, they are. Now, a comment you make early on in your book is that experiences that we have, and nobody's exempt from these, good, bad, or indifferent, and I'll quote from your book, they can undo or overwrite early learning to help us cope differently or more resiliently with anything at all. Now, when I said good, bad, or indifferent, our responses, our patterned responses, and all of us have them, and I think part of growing into adulthood is unlearning maybe those responses that we have adopted because that's what we thought we were supposed to do, and really getting down to finding out who we are and being able to say, no, I don't particularly want to have a Henry VIII attitude. I'd rather be more like Condoleezza Rice. I'm just pulling a name out of the air. And, you know, it's who is it that you want to emulate? And I can remember as a child loving biography, absolutely loved biography, whether it was someone famous like Florence Nightingale or, you know, the big people of whatever era. I found it amazing. And with every one of these individuals, they always had to go through their own journeys to grow into who they were. And it always intrigued me. All of these stories, and everyone has their story. And in your book, you go into how important it is for us to understand that if we do reach a point where we recognize a certain behavior is not serving us well, we can rewire our potential patterning. That makes a difference.
That's right. You're raising several important points here, Donna. One is I try to distinguish in the book the difference between an external stressor, any event on the outside that triggers a response from us on the inside, and then our internal stress response. So technically, it's our response that creates the stress. So I do try to distinguish between stressors or trauma on the outside and the stress response on the inside, and learning how to calm down that stress response and change our early patterning about that. When you're talking about biographies, one of the people that I quoted in the book was Eleanor Roosevelt, who mm-hmm. I think is a stellar role model of resilience coming through the Great Depression and World War II and the infidelities of her husband, who happened to be President of the United States. And Eleanor Roosevelt said, do one thing every day that scares you. So that's one of the exercises that I have in the book, is helping people learn how to do one scary thing a day as a way of retraining their brain to respond to stress differently. When we can see what our responses are, even when they're very unconscious, they're very automatic, but we cultivate the capacity to see what they are and to even feel them coming up in our body before they're full-blown, and be able to choose a different response, then we have a sense of competence and mastery that we're actually becoming resilient, regardless of the storms and struggles outside.
Mm-hmm. And I think that mindfulness goes along with it, because we need to, first of all, be awakened to certain things that we do. I find it fascinating that there will be in families, whole families, certain patterning that are cultivated, and there's almost like a blindness to it until maybe one of those members of family will recognize it, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And you'll go, do you know you do this just exactly by like so-and-so in the family? No, I don't. Yes, you do. Why is it you do it? No, I don't know that I'm doing it. It's like an amnesia, anyway. I'll use that word. I think it's an unawareness. And when they become consciously aware, they go, I didn't even realize that. No, you don't, because it is something that everybody around you, socially, everyone that you grew up with, was adopting a certain patterning. So for you to do the step aside and say, no, I choose not to do that anymore, that's quite an accomplishment.
Exactly. So early on in the book, when I talk about how resilience can go awry, I talk about the conditioning that happens in our earliest relationships, for good or ill, and that the patterning that is encoded in the neural circuitry of the brain in terms of those response patterns that we're learning from people around us get encoded by the time that we're 12 to 18 months of age. So you're absolutely right. When you talk about childhood amnesia, we actually don't have a conscious memory of the earliest responses to experience that we have, but it's all encoded in the brain. As we become more and more conscious and aware of our behaviors, then we can begin to bring those patterns to awareness and choose how to change them. One of the points I made in the book is that because we operate so much of the time on implicit memory, and certainly when we're under stress, we default to that implicit memory, we will wind up behaving in ways that we don't necessarily want to. We've learned better, but we go back to those earliest survival responses because they're encoded in the deepest parts of our brain. So when I offer ways to change that conditioning, I'm actually offering two ways. One is new conditioning, which is simply using a new experience to create a new pathway, to create a new behavior. But I'm also talking about reconditioning, where we know now, this has only been seen in the scanners in the last 5 to 7 years, we know how we can pair a positive, wholesome, effective strategy or memory with a more negative or problematic one. And if the new positive one especially contradicts or disconfirms the old pattern, it can literally unlock and rewire the circuitry that's in the brain. That's the basis of all trauma therapy, so that we no longer have to do the old patterns at all. I also use our capacities of mindfulness, our capacities to be aware, to change how the brain processes information, going into a more spacious, mental play space where we can actually loosen the connections among the circuitry and connect the dots in a new way. It's the basis of when people have ahas or epiphanies or revelations in a dream or in a state of daydream or reverie. So we also use that way of processing in the brain to change the old patterns.
One of the points of information that I was very much intrigued with was the chemical processing that goes on in the body and how in the brain, cortisol is a significant hormone. And I was really intrigued with the effect throughout the body. Now, we're hearing more and more about how many times if people are under a lot of stress, they can't possibly, if they're overweight, their weight just won't shift. The body actually fights them because the cortisol goes into place, and it creates a chemistry. But the cortisol is really quite an amazing component that they're coming out with more and more information, and you go into that quite a bit. You say that if someone is under very high stress and they're not of a resilient level, and it actually can destroy brain cells. And that was a piece of information that I'm not so sure I've heard any too much about.
So I do try to talk about both cortisol and the brain's antidote to cortisol, which is oxytocin. So cortisol is more likely the household word, or adrenaline is more likely the household word, where people know that when we become startled or frightened, we can rev our nervous system up into a fight-flight-freeze response. And that's the cortisol coursing through our system to get our body moving to either fight on our own behalf or run away from a danger. And so it gets the body moving, but there is a cost. It suppresses the immune system. It makes us more vulnerable to illness and disease. We're not meant to have cortisol running through our system all the time. We're meant to get away from immediate danger and then go back to homeostasis or back to equilibrium. When the cortisol keeps running in our modern society, that's more likely the case. People feel stressed from morning to night. The body's natural antidote to cortisol is oxytocin, and that is the hormone of safety and trust. It's the hormone that's released in bonding and attachment. So it's released when we feel safe and loved and cherished in a relationship. So I have a lot of exercises in the book to help people cultivate a sense of remembering feeling safe or loved or cherished in the relationship, which activates our own natural caregiving system. It activates the release of oxytocin, and blood pressure can lower immediately when oxytocin is running through the system. The researchers have even found that being primed with oxytocin, being primed already with a sense of feeling safe and loved and cherished, can preempt the stress response. Something dangerous or unpleasant can happen, and our body doesn't go into that automatic fight, flight, freeze response because we're already calmed down by the oxytocin. So that's why I have a lot of exercises in the book to use relationships and to use guided imagination to activate the release of oxytocin and bring our body back to a sense of equilibrium so that we can actually respond with our higher brain online effectively to the situations that we're facing.
I would like for you to share one of the exercises in your book, and one that I thought was especially good, and anybody could do anytime, anyplace, anywhere. And that is where you take your hand and put it over your heart. You're making a heart connection. Would you share that exercise with my listeners?
I'd be happy to, because that is the exercise in the book that's kind of going viral. And if I ever get emails from people asking for permission to reprint something, it's about that exercise. So I can talk the listeners through it, but explaining some of the neuroscience as we go through it as well, so they can understand why it's so effective. So the first step, anytime there's a moment of a startle or a inside the body, to simply put your own hand on your own heart. The warm touch of your hand begins to activate the release of the oxytocin. It begins to calm your nervous system down. Then if you begin to take long, slow, deep, gentle breaths into the heart center, the long, slow, deep breathing activates the parasympathetic branch of the nervous system, which is the calming branch of the nervous system. And that also helps us to begin to calm down. If you breathe into your heart center a sense of goodness or ease or safety or trust, breathing positive emotions into the heart center restores a coherence to the heart rate variability that also helps bring your body back to a sense of equilibrium. Then, if you take a moment to remember a moment when you felt safe and loved and cherished with someone, and that could be someone close to you, like a spouse or a child, but it doesn't have to be. It's a moment with anyone where you felt safe and loved. It could be a neighbor. It could be a friend or a colleague. It could be a teacher back in the third grade. It could be a spiritual figure. It could be a pet. You're simply remembering a moment of feeling safe and loved, and you notice the feeling in your body when you're feeling safe and loved. When that feeling is steady in your body, and most people report a sense of a kind of warm glow, then you can let go of the visual image and just bathe in the feeling in your body. That entire exercise, it took me longer to talk through it than it does to do it, that entire exercise can be done in a minute, and you can calm down a panic attack in a minute with that exercise.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's a marvelous exercise. You have some wonderful, wonderful stories in your book about real people dealing with real situations. And I loved the one about the two women that were driving to destinations where they were very concerned about family members. There was an urgency, and there had been a storm. There was a tree in the middle of the road. It blocked them from being able to go through. And these two women get out. They're both very anxious. They've got a timeline. There is an urgency in each of their conditions. And these two women have a problem. And when they get out of their cars and they're looking at this gigantic tree that's blocking their way, they come up with this resolution. They give each other their keys and say, you go this way because I'm heading in that direction. You take my car. And the other one gives the keys and said, yes, you take my car. They trusted each other in each other's cars. They each went to their destination, and they both brought the cars back to the trees so they both could go home. And I thought, this, you know, this is what good relationships and trust is all about. Both of these women said, I trust you because we both have a common need. We have something that can be done, but the tree is in our way. So how do we deal with it? And this is something when it comes to problem solving, where you may or may not be able to do this on your own. And it's okay to ask for help. And that was one of the biggest lessons in my life that I had to learn, was how to say, I need help. Because I'd been taught never to do that. That wasn't what you do. If you couldn't, and my audience has heard me say this before, if you, Donna, if you can't figure it out, then suck it up, kid. That's the way it goes. Well, I had to unlearn that thinking. Because that's really, when you get down to it, that's pretty stupid. Because we can't know everything. And everyone's experience is different.
You're raising some very, very important points here. The story that you told about the two Canadian women caught in the ice storm that downed the tree and blocked their way, so that they saw each other over this big tree and decided they could trust each other and trade cars so they could each get to the hospital they needed to get to. Part of what helps that happen is I was telling the story to illustrate some of the neuroscience, and of course we remember the story and we can forget the neuroscience, but the neuroscience is there's a very small structure in the right hemisphere of the brain called the fusiform gyrus. And again, the listeners don't need to remember that, but there's a structure in the right hemisphere of the brain that allows us to read and interpret the facial expressions and the body language of someone that we're looking at. When we can perceive in the face of the other a sense of trust or ease or safety, that calms down. There's a correlation that calms down the fear response of the lower brain. And so these two women were able to read each other's facial expressions, sort of pick up the vibe in their resonance circuit, and decide that they could trust each other. If either one of them had had a different experience, some kind of trauma around trusting someone and being betrayed, that story might have gone very differently. But as it was, they were able to use their higher brain, read the facial expressions, the emotional expressions through the mirror neurons, and be able to feel in their own body, oh, I can trust this person. The more we learn how our brain actually does that, then we can learn to trust ourselves. Now, asking for help is really important. I cited in the book studies that were done at the University of Michigan where they had several students at the bottom of a hill, and they were told or asked to estimate the height of the hill. When they gave their estimate, and that was recorded, when a heavy backpack was put on their shoulders, they were then again asked to estimate the height of the hill again, and the hill got higher. When they took the backpack off and then someone stood beside them to climb the hill with them, they again estimated the height of the hill, and the height of the hill went lower in their perception. So whenever we have a sense of help available, the problems that we're facing seem less daunting. One of the quotes that I put in the book that I love from the writer James Baldwin says, "The moment we cease to hold each other, the sea engulfs us and the light goes out." So we really do need to be able to remember to ask people for help. On the other hand, there's also the resource of knowing deep inside that we can do something because we've done something before. A sense of, oh, sure I can. And part of that sense comes from having been helped in situations before, but part of it comes from a sense of previous competence doing anything that can translate into a sense of, well, I can do the next thing I need to do. So both are important, asking for help and trusting our own capacities to do what needs to be done.
I know that we're getting close to being out of time, but I want to share this wonderful autobiography that is in the book. It's 5 short chapters. 1.
Mm-hmm.
I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm lost. I'm helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes me forever to find a way out. Chapter 2. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place, but it isn't my fault. Still takes a long time to get out. Chapter 3. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it is there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It's my fault. I get out immediately. Chapter 4. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter 5. I walk down another street. That's by Portia Nelson. I thought, this is the autobiography of life, and we do this over and over and over again. And it's not bad, but it's becoming awakened to the reality we can shift. And I think that there is such a feeling of helplessness many times with people when they feel like they're locked in to a behavioral patterning, mm-hmm. and they don't know. They go, I just can't help myself. We'll say, well, mm-hmm. yes, you can. Let's look at maybe some things that you can do. And somewhere there has to come within themselves this, my eyes are open, I mm-hmm. know where I am, I'm aware, and I don't need to stay in the hole anymore. It's not necessary, and I can go a different direction.
Thank you for sharing that, Donna, because that is really, in a sense, the heart of the book. It's in the chapter about shit happens, excuse my French, and
that's
shit
all right.
happens too. So that mm-hmm. anything that we're faced with, we can choose our attitude about it and we can choose our response to it. And that poem, Autobiography in 5 Short Chapters, sort of captures that in a way that we can take with us.
I agree. I know that we're out of time, Linda. Your book, Bouncing Back, Rewiring Your Brain for Maximum Resilience and Well-Being, is much more than that. And it not only educates, bringing the Western science perspective together in technological terms, if you will, but you've written it so that just about anybody can read it, and you also share a lot of stories of different people, different circumstances, and how they were able to make their shifts mindfully, being aware of what was going on. Now, you have a website. I believe it's Linda Graham dash M, F like Frank, T like Tom dot net. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That is your website, and people can find out more about exercises that they can do. But I think this is a type of book, when you get bouncing back, rewiring your brain, you want to be sure you have a pen or a highlighter in your hand, because you need to understand this may assist you in whatever line of work you might be in, and working with kids or working with members of your own family. Mm-hmm. And working with yourself. And I think that any time we can empower ourselves to realize that we can exercise dominion over our own mind space, wow, that gives you an empowerment level that's phenomenal. Linda Graham, I want to thank you very much for being my guest today. Your book, Bouncing Back, is quite informational and an eye-opener. And relative to your perspectives as a professional, I think they're well said. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Donna. A pleasure.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
We see it every day. Courts overflowing with frivolous lawsuits. People losing all of their assets simply because they were unprepared. The best defense against unscrupulous predators and creditors is a good offense. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes and from all over the world create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Think asset protection is only for the wealthy? Think again. Our Cover Your Assets strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Industry leader Corporate Direct is owned and operated by attorney and best-selling author Garrett Sutton. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can tailor a CYA plan for you. That's CYA, Cover Your Assets, with Corporate Direct. 1-800-600-1760. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Do you have a product or service that you would like people to know about? Internet radio is a powerful medium that can assist you in reaching people who like to shop online and pass by electronic word of mouth information about you, your products, and or services. The Donna Sebo Show reaches around the world, and you can be part of that enterprising network. For more information, contact Vision Broadcasting via Donna at DelphiInternational.com
or call 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
If you are an author and would like to be a guest on the Donna Sebo Show, please send a review copy of your publication along with a press release to the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Allow 6 to 8 weeks for your material to be reviewed. Again, the address to send your material to is the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. 888-627-6008 is the telephone number for you to call if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, which will be my pleasure. And, of course, you're welcome to ask a question afterwards. Now, we're going to be posting up on BBS the guests that are going to be coming up next month. And next week, let me give you a heads up about what we're going to be talking about. If stress is something that is in your life and you go, the big S, I am so weary of it. What can I do to get it out of my life? Well, we talked a little bit about it today, but we're going to be talking about with Paul Haljek, who has put out a book, Stress Pandemic. I sometimes wonder if we don't program ourselves for that. I really do. I think that's almost a given. When I watch programs on television or I'm listening to various things, it's like pace, 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 fast, fast, fast. Well, we're going to be addressing that on Monday. And down the up escalator, Barbara Carson, or Garson, excuse me, is her last name. This is an amazing publication because she's going to be talking about 99% of the population and how they have been affected by the recession and how they are dealing with it. So this is a book that's really interesting. And then Betsy Thompson, we'll be talking with her on Wednesday. What happens if, dot, dot, dot? What happens if? How can you take what you've got and make shift with it? What happens if this or that or the other? Well, we're going to find out more from Betsy. The Secret Life of Fathers, James Bond. This is a heartwarming book. And we're coming up to, very shortly, a period where we're going to be honoring fathers. And Father's Day is very, very special. Well, we're going to be having some guests, and we'll be talking to about that very factor. Guys that are going to share their wisdom. And then Dr. Z, we're going to be talking about dental care and some of the latest innovation in dentistry. So this is going to all be coming up next week. And, of course, there's going to be all of this posted on BBS with the show information button. That'll be coming up this weekend, so you'll be able to see exactly what is evolving on the Donna Sebo Show. And, of course, you know, if you're a regular listener, we have all kinds of subject matter that we discuss on this show because I enjoy diversity. And I think the more paradigms, the more options we can hear about and view give us a chance to make choices that maybe otherwise we wouldn't have had. Speaking of making choices, oh, and by the way, you can make the choice to give me a call at 888-627-6008. Remember, all I need is your first name or your initial. That's all. Let me tell you what I see, and then you're welcome to ask me anything that you like. I wanted to share some ideas with you. Now, these are sort of creative ideas. And if you're like me and you enjoy entertaining, and of course we're coming to the time very quickly, hopefully, whether it's, you know, that the weather is going to be warming up. Here in the Pacific Northwest, we've been enjoying an absolutely fabulous spring. I mean, it was just wonderful. Last year, it was terrible. Spring and summer was wet, it was gray, and we were hardly able to spend any time out on the deck. Well, we have had some glorious weather here in the Pacific Northwest, actually better than in many parts of the country. And for those of you that are starting to see those temperatures rise wherever you are and you enjoy being out of doors, I came across some ways of using candles. Now, for me, that isn't often what I like to get into very much because I'm always concerned about a potential fire, especially if I'm going to have people over and they have little kids and things that maybe could get turned over or whatever. You really have to think when you're going to put candles out and about. And there are a couple of ideas that I thought, this is really great. I love to can, and all the mason jars are always saved. Do any of you relate to that? You have them in your pantry, and next time you've got, so you don't have to keep rebuying what you should already have. And they're used up that way. Well, sometimes you have an abundance of them, and you go, what in the world could I use these for? Maybe you just end up giving them to the thrift store. Well, why not do something that I saw as a suggestion, and I loved it. If you're going to be having an outdoor activity and you would love to have candles out there because candles give this warm, wonderful magic when they're lit, and you can use citron candles if you want to keep the bugs away, but if you're just wanting to create a magical effect, you can use mason jars. Now, this is what somebody came up with. They took a mason jar, and they will tie a string or a pretty ribbon around the lips of the jars. And, of course, you want them sparkling clean so that they're, and just put them in the dishwasher and run them through, and they're just going to be clean as a whistle. And what you do is tie a pretty ribbon around them and make sure that they're long enough where you can hang them in different places. That way they're out of the way. You don't have to worry about anything. And you can put either sand, a little, you know, some sand or dirt in the bottom of the jar, or you could even use water if you wanted to. And that way, when the candle is reaching the point where it's getting very, very low, you are not going to have to worry about it being a hazard because it's contained inside the jar. And you can put pretty flowers around the candle. You don't want to put anything plastic, but you could use your own imagination, maybe paint the outside of the jars if you like. But you can hang those around. And depending on the size of the jar, depends on the size of the candle. But you could hang them strategically, and they will just be wonderful. absolutely wonderful. And when they get low, they'll automatically go out because they're in sand, and or you can use water, whatever it is going to be the snuffing out process. Also, and this is a project that you might want to do with older kids, 10 cans. If you have cans, and if you're like me, they automatically go into the recycle bin, well, that's fine, but what if you want to have a candle holder that's really decorative? Maybe you've got kids. Maybe you want to do something creative yourself. Well, I really like this. What you do, you pick an empty can, and of course the top, obviously, is off of it. You want to be very careful about not handling the sharp edges that could be on the inside. If you're lucky and you have one of those can openers that when you use it, it leaves not a rough edge, a smooth edge, that is optimum. You want to make sure it's clean, and then you want to fill the can with water, leaving about an inch of space at the top, and put the can filled with water in your freezer. You leave it there overnight, and then once it's frozen solid, it might be that after a couple of hours it's frozen solid. What you want to do is, on the outside of the can, your paper wrapper has been removed, obviously. On the outside of the can, you can draw a pattern, whatever you'd like. And what you want to do is put the can on a work surface, or maybe just do it outside on the grass somewhere, and take a hammer and a nail and carefully punch holes along the outline of whatever sketch you put on the outside of the can. And you can wrap a dish towel around it to make sure you hold it steady while you're hammering. And then once you're finished punching the holes in the design, then you let the ice in the can thaw out. Just put it upside down in the sink. And you have got something that is a marvelous candle holder. You could use it again and again and again. And whatever pattern you have there, the light's going to shine through the pattern. I think it's a great idea. And all you have to do is just, you know, just keep on doing it, and you can add to the design, and it's wonderful. It's a great idea of using something that most of us are going to have around the house. You can use cans of any size. That's right. Some of the great big ones you can use. But this way, it's a creative activity, and again, if you have older kids, you can give them a job, maybe draw the patterns on them, maybe let them draw the patterns, and then punch those holes, and it's a wonderful result. And it looks absolutely fabulous. And if you really want to add the magical touch, paint the outside of the cans after the holes are punched and just put on whatever other designs you want. You can be as artistic with this as you like, but I think it is a great idea. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to share with you a story about a teenager that didn't have any hope regarding being able to get a job, and how a perfect stranger, to that stranger's surprise, was able to change this young man's life and his own at the same time. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to come back in just a minute. Don't forget, you can give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a paranormal experience, such as seeing a ghost, having precognitive dreams, out-of-body experiences, or other happenings? If so, Donna would like to hear from you. She's putting together a book of 100 stories from people who would like to tell their story. If you'd like to submit yours, send an email to donna@delphiinternational.com. Again, send your story to donna@delphiinternational.com. Be sure to include your contact information as well. Thank you.
Too many people become victims of frivolous lawsuits and scammers simply because they were unprepared. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Asset protection is not only for the wealthy. Our strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can help you. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and there is a phone number if you want to give me a buzz, 888-627-6008. Many times people will literally walk into our lives, and they're perfect strangers when this happens. They can change our lives, and we're not expecting that change at all. And that is what happened with two individuals. One individual was a teenager, 18 years old. Actually, we'd call him an adult in our modern world. From Indianapolis, he was feeling totally and completely hopeless. Now, his mom had died when he was 16. His name is Jaquiel, and he had had to drop out of school. He didn't have any family. He didn't really have a home. He eventually, though, went back to school and got his GED. But when he was 18, he was having a very, very difficult time. He couldn't find a job anywhere. And there was something inside of him, though, that made him continue to try. Now, there was an opportunity for a job at a thrift store, and he had gone through the first processing of the interviewing, but he had to go for a face-to-face meeting. It was 10 miles away from where he was staying with friends. He didn't have a car, and there was no money for him to even take a bus. Jaquiel had to walk. Now, for most young people today, that would be like, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do that. But Jaquiel was not going to give up. So 10 miles, that is a fair amount to walk, and it's going to take you hours to get from point A to point B. So he decided that he wanted to make sure that when he arrived, he looked fresh. So he was going to get up early in the morning so he could get to his 1 o'clock interview in the afternoon. Now, he'd gone about 3 miles when he passed someone in a restaurant parking lot. That person's name was Art. And he walked up to him and he said, "Excuse me, how far is it to 10th and Sherman?" Well, Art said, "That's about 7 miles from here." Well, Jaquiel said, "Thank you very much. I needed to know that." And he started walking. Well, Art, who is self-employed, he has his own business, he owns a restaurant, was driving along Sherman Avenue. His wife was with him, and he recognized Jaquiel. He said, "My goodness, that boy, that young man, has walked all the way 7 miles from where I saw him at the restaurant parking lot." Well, Art and his wife, they had a nice family of their own. In fact, they have 4 children. And their oldest son was about the same age as Jaquiel. And Art was just amazed because here's this young man that he had just met for a few moments in a parking lot that had walked that entire distance. So Art pulls up beside him, opens up the car door and says, "Come on, son, get in. We're going to give you a ride. Tell us where you're going and what's happening. Why is it that you've had to walk so far?" And when Art heard the story, it blew him away. He had never met a young person that was that committed to getting to a destination to find a job. And he thought about it, and he said, "This job is going to be minimum wage. This isn't going to be paying him a lot of money. But this young man is willing to do whatever is necessary to get the job." He said, "It really says something about him and his character." Well, Jaquiel arrived for the thrift store interview, and sadly, the job had already been given to someone else, and he got so dejected about the whole thing. Well, Art and his wife just couldn't get this young man out of their mind. And his wife said to him, "Art, why don't we hire this young man? Anybody that's this committed, that is this determined, might make a wonderful employee for us." So Art had gotten Jaquiel's phone number. They had exchanged phone numbers the last time that they had been together in the car. And Jekyll didn't expect to hear from Art. He just thought he was a very nice man that was willing to help him out, but he didn't expect anything from Art at all. When he got the call from Art, and Art saying, "I want to hire you," he could hardly believe his ears. Well, both Art and his wife, Colleen, said they knew that this young man would become a very significant part of their extended family. This is what Art did. Art, after hiring Jekyll, put this young man's story on his restaurant's Facebook page. All of his friends spread the story. People that Jekyll never in a million years would have even known would have been interested or were interested in his story responded. All of these strangers pitched in to help him. They gave money. They said, "If you need furniture for an apartment, we'll help you out. We'll do everything we can because you've gone that extra mile." Someone came up with a scooter that they didn't want anymore so that he could go to work. Didn't have to walk, he could ride. And it was affordable. When this happened with Jekyll, he did something that was totally unexpected. He decided he was going to start a foundation for other people who were looking for work. His boss, Art, said, "All I did was give a young man a job." But Jekyll said it was more than that. He had had so many doors slammed in his face. So many things had happened in his life that were not something that he asked for, his mother's death. His feelings of failure that came from feeling so very, very alone. All of that was turned around because one man decided to give a boy, a young man, a ride to a job that he didn't get. Jekyll said, "I was just some random kid. But Art believed in me. He said, 'I'm working now, I've got a place to live, and I'm making a difference. I'll always be grateful to Art for giving me the chance to change my life for the better, and now I can help others make their lives better, too.'" Pass it on. That's exactly what Jekyll is doing. He's passing it on. Art is passing it on when he recognized, and his wife recognized, that this was a person of exceptional character by their actions that they were demonstrating. You see, one person makes such a significant difference. And wherever you are, whatever you are experiencing in this life right now, you are making a difference. And taking time to recognize the light in somebody else can change their life in a phenomenal way. Art did it. His wife did it. Strangers did it. And Jekyll has done it. Can you imagine the ongoing ripple effect from two people, perfect strangers, who happened to walk across each other's path? This is Donna Sebo. I know that we're just about out of time. Won't you join me? Tell your friends about the show. And remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You are resilient. You are someone that is creating a greatness in your own experience. Sometimes you just need to open up your eyes and say, "I'm here. Thank you. I wonder what beautiful things are going to come into my life today." Greet the weekend with a smile. God bless. Whatever you do, be safe, be happy, know joy, and let your light shine. God bless. We'll be back with you on Monday. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.